Hello and welcome to QS Cast. Each week we take a look at the big stories in Magic Finance and give you the story on what's worth buying and selling. If you're subscribed to Quiet Speculation's Insider Service, you're hearing this podcast on Wednesday. If you're not already signed up, you had to wait till Friday to hear this. If you're not familiar with the Insider Service, head on over to quietspeculation.com and you'll find out about all the ways we can help you pay less money to play Magic.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the QS Cast. Tarkin and I joining you again. Had a great special there. I think it was really interesting that everyone got that perspective. It was a long one. I appreciate everyone kind of hanging in there, but we just kind of let the tape roll, and I think we had a really good cast. So People like having the vendors on. So sticking with vendors, we have an esteemed guest on this week again. Morgan Wentworth from Lodestone Games, or you just know her around the MTG community. Hi, Morgan. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing just fine.
Hey, Morgan.
What's going on? So I'm really glad you can join us, and I wanted to do this for quite some time, especially because if you haven't been cluing in, Lodestone Games keeps popping up all over the place, maybe because my feed is curated because I know all of most of you that now working at Lodestone Games, but no, I mean, you guys have done a great job over there, so I think this is going to be, like, you know, Target and I have discussed, it's going to be a great perspective, again, for you being entrenched in the community, a lot of people in the community, you're a positive force, you're also a very good player, having that duality there to your manager at Lodestone, and you're also a player, so that kind of is that it's advantageous for you to have that kind of perspective. So let's just jump right in. So just give a little bit of a background to for yourself and for Lodestone, for us and the listeners.
Okay. So I started working at game stores as kind of a way to get more involved in a game that I love, and fortunately I got put in touch with a couple of guys in Minneapolis who were looking to open a new store, and they asked me to come on and help them as their community manager, and that's Lodestone Coffee and Games, which is kind of sprang up from the popularity of a couple of modern tournaments that Twin Cities Games put on every week, and the guys got so successful at it that they decided they wanted to open their own brick and mortar. So Lodestone Coffee and Games is a coffee shop and a game store in Minnetonka, Minnesota. And the way the model works is we've got a lot of seating. It's all very comfortable. It's all very polished looking. And people can come in, buy a cup of coffee, sit down and play a game. And we run Magic events 6 nights a week, and on Sunday we have Open Commander, so 7 days a week of Magic alongside all of the other gaming offerings that we have. And we have a huge selection of Magic cards. We're very rarely out of stock of anything apart from like 3 or 4 cards that sell as soon as we buy them.
How is that transition from a player to manager, and kind of from a manager back to a player? Like, how does one affect the other, and is it, you know, advantageous at least for you to do your job at Lodestone because you know a lot about the game and you're kind of entrenched in that on that part? That you, does it make it a little easier for you to recognize what you want to be in more stock of or less in stock of at any given time?
Well, one of the things that being a manager really gave me the opportunity to do was, as a player, I have spent a lot of time commiserating with other players about this or that thing. And it's given me an opportunity to offer my fellow players something that I see them wanting. For example, in a few weeks, we are running a PPTQ. It'll be Lodestone's first PPTQ, and it's sealed, which we have about 2 or 3 of them a season overall, because I think a lot of stores don't like running them. They might not see them as profitable or as popular, or there's a lot of work that goes into it. But there's a lot of demand for competitive sealed in the Twin Cities, so that's like, something I get to do is offer people a thing that I know that they want because I want it to. And unfortunately, that means I can't play in this sealed PvTQ. But, it's still, like, all of my friends and all of the people who come in on a weekly basis get the opportunity to, like, test their skills at a little bit more of a competitive level, which is pretty awesome. And then, you know, I am right there, like, watching people play walking ballistas and getting counters and stuff like that. And so, like, I see this is a cool deck. People, like, I want to play this deck, and it lets me know, like, if somebody hands me a pile of commons and uncommons from Aether Revolt, I'm going to pull out their Winding Constrictors and hand them, you know, a quarter or something to just have those in stock, which I think is pretty important to be able to offer people the chance to play cool decks by, you know, working really hard to get those cards.
I find it very interesting because, like you just said, you pointed out a little thing there that people will hand you, like, a stack of stuff that maybe they're selling in or they're trying to buy list, and you're just pulling out the Winding Constrictors. Now, is that because, you know, that's your player side kicking in, or, like, you're watching Star City Games, or how do you – are you doing that over the course of the weekend? You're like, oh, listen, I need to start, like – I need to start acquiring these because people are going to start coming in over the next week, especially now coming towards a Pro Tour.
Well, it's really easy to see decks that people will want to play, partially because I want to play them too. Cards, like decks
Fair
that
enough.
Are made of two mana, two threes, and like things that include counters and value and stuff. It's really easy to pick out those. And then there's just cards that I know we're going to go out of stock of immediately. Like if it's a $5 uncommon in the case of Fatal Push, there's something special there, and I need to have those available for people. So it's kind of a mix between me checking on TCG Player and checking on Star City Games and watching coverage and watching tournament results, and me kind of picking up on, you know, the kind of mood about something. Like, people are going to talk at Friday Night Magic about the latest decks, and it's up to me to kind of determine which people are, you know, talking about how Storm is the next big thing in Standard, and people who are talking about how this competitive deck is really good.
Let's segue into, you know, we've seen the last 2 weeks of, you know, SCG results, Morgan. You're basically on the doorstep of another Pro Tour. Everything is happening. Can you kind of at least describe, at least on your part? Because, I mean, I've been in a lot of stores, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, Tarkin and I were actually discussing this pre-recording, and this is where your perspective comes in. It's so unique. You know, you go into a lot of these, a good amount of these stores, and, you know, they do employ some people that know the game and all that, but it's mostly just kind of corporate thing. It's the kind of aggregate card, you know, the card prices, like you alluded to in the pre-recording, that, you know, people are just, you know, make up or print prices the way they do it. How are you anticipating, you know, at least over the weekend, or how are you preparing yourself? Is there specific things that you kind of at least look at from your own view and say, like, oh, this could be at the Pro Tour. Let me put this aside. Let me make sure I have a couple of these. Like, how are you, I guess, preparing yourself overall for something like that?
So one of a good example of how we do that is actually the announcement that there was going to be bannings in a pre-Pro Tour ban. That was a few weeks ago now. And so one of the things that we did as a store was we took a look at, you know, what cards are going to be banned and how that will impact the price, what cards that may be banned and how that will impact the price of other cards. For example, the fact that Reflector Mage was banned means that there's a good chance that Verdurous Gearhulk is going to come back in a big way. The fact that Smuggler's Copter was banned, it means that, you know, Torrential Gearhulk Control is something that people might start considering more heavily now, because that sort of deck is going to be threatened more by the Smuggler's Copter decks, and with that not around to prey on it, there's a pretty good chance that it'll be still good. So what we're kind of looking for around the Pro Tour is something similar. Like, what decks are good, sure, we're going to look for, you know, what new innovations are attached to the Saheeli Rai and green-black decks, obviously. But we're also going to look for what decks might prey on it. Is there going to be a good aggro deck that comes out of it? And is there a card that's just like a really key piece of that? And we're going to try and buy more of those on top of, you know, making sure that we get a good price on our Saheeli Rai, because we're kind of balancing out right now.
Right.
Buying them because people want them, but also not buying too many of them because, like, we're eyeing that banned and restricted announcement again.
No, and are these just real quick? Are these conversations all done in house? Like, do you guys get together and discuss this?
We have a Slack channel for us, and I'm gonna name drop some people here.
All right, go ahead.
I work with Ryan Overturf and Eric Hawkins, which I think your listeners might recognize those names.
I also work with, Ryan works with QS.
Yeah.
Ryan, yep.
And so I work with them, as well as some guys who are just really savvy Magic players and like Magic vendors. So we have a Slack going on that's like, hey, Morgan, did you notice that Jace Vryn's Prodigy spiked with Frontier? Or, hey, Morgan, I think that this card is looking really good right now. And it's not just, hey, Morgan, but if I'm working, then they'll be like, hey, Morgan, you should take a look at these prices. So, yeah, we have – it's not like we have meetings, like formal meetings, but we do have a channel that's like constantly – feeding us information, and I think a lot of us are really plugged in. Like, we all have a Twitter feed that is cultivated such that we knew when copycat was going to be a thing, and we knew when the banned and restricted announcement was going to be made, stuff like that.
Very interesting. And see, and that's kind of like, and that's kind of what sets you apart in that sense from a lot of the other stores, where they're basically just reactionary, right? Like they couldn't sit down and tell you what exactly they thought would be banned or what have you. And we've talked to vendors, and that's not a slight to the vendors. I mean, I'm sure they have a team as well, but I'm sure it comes to a surprise as much to them and not as much a surprise to you guys as well, or on that front. And you know, again, it's just, you know, bigger stores, they're just kind of reactionary. They're like, okay, well, you know, these cards will get banned, you know, I'm sure we'll get some buy lists in and this, that, and the other thing. It's just kind of business as usual, where I think you guys are, since you're all well-seasoned players in that sense as well, can kind of at least be up on things before it actually kind of balloons and gets out of control, right? So,
We're all really plugged in, I think, is one advantage that Lodestone has as a store that sells Magic cards.
So I'm actually curious. So you guys are obviously, you watch the ban list, like you mentioned, but then we have these SCG events that occur. And do you guys feel, because I'm not as deep in the player side of things. I go just based off the market movements and what does well, but it seems like a lot of the meta, at least the beginning of the meta, is established at these events. Do you guys sort of look at that and go, okay, now we see what is happening here? Obviously that has to inform a lot of your decisions when it comes to cards that you're speculating on, or cards that you guys are going to buy more of, or how you guys are approaching sort of playtesting, right? Like, I'm assuming that these events kind of set, they kind of open the door for what's going to be kind of coming up at the Pro Tour, right?
There's some of that. There's also some of we run three standard events a week, right? We have it Monday, Thursday, Friday, and so we get a lot of looks at what people want to be good, as well as what is actually good. And sometimes, like, that's really important. We've got a lot of people playing Metalwork Colossus right now, and so as the metagame shifts, there's a good chance the cards that are good in that deck and like other decks. Like, I know the last episode of you guys that I listened to, I had it on in the car this morning. You guys were talking about things like Inspiring Statuary. So stuff like that is also pretty important to look at on top of tournament results, because, you know, not all Magic players are out to play the best deck
right at
the store level. So it's important to see, you know, this card has a lot of appeal to players as well.
That's cool. That's actually really cool, because typically what happens around this time is most people are going, okay, what is SCG? What's happening at SCG? Great. So, and what's happening at Pro Tour? And obviously there's this heavy, heavy emphasis on competitive staples, which does make sense. But I think like you're saying, there's sometimes people can overlook the cards that, you know, the average LGS person goes, oh, wow, that's a cool Pro Tour deck. And maybe they want to build the budget version, or maybe they want to build something that they know locally will be fun to play against those decks that people are going to be bringing, right? Like, I think that's something that's, I think it's really important to not discount the sort of the other cards that the more casual standard players or whatever the, you know, the most, whatever the competitive format is at the time that's being played at the events, you know, to not overlook those. So I think that's a really, really key perspective.
Yeah. Well, like, one of the examples that I can think of off the top of my deck, my head rather, is Pyromancer's Goggles from a couple Pro Tours ago.
Yep.
Like, once Pyromancer's Goggles kind of debuted, even if it was like a couple sets past when Magic Origins came out, like, people were all over that deck. And so, like, people wanted to draw four cards off of Tormenting Voice, for example. So it's not even like, you know, these are the decks that I threw together. They're like the tier two decks of Standard with like really cool mythics that do cool things that catch people's imagination a lot.
Yeah.
Talking a little more specifically, Morgan, and I'm sure actually it will be advantageous for you guys, since this Pro Tour is such at a weird time that it happens, I'm assuming, before you guys open. Are you guys, I mean, how quickly, and this is, again, more just purely for Pro Tour, just to get a sense of, you know, for the listeners, you know, I'm sure you're glued to the coverage, right? So are you, when you're seeing early are you even seeing stuff early on and you're thinking in the back of your mind, like, when I go in today, like, I have to make sure, like, those prices are bumped, or I know people are going to be coming in, like, I can't be, you know, how do you manage that so you're not kind of, I guess, left A, without stock, and B, kind of selling stuff when you know this could be a legitimate deck, and this card can is a component of that, which obviously would make increase, at least for a period of time, by the end of the Pro Tour. Like, how do you really manage that, or on that front?
Well, again, we have our chat where, like, people who are really good at finance, aside from myself, will like go on and be like, hey, this card, like, take a look at this card. And one of the things that's really important is like looking for signs that that card is going to go up really, really high. If you check TCG Player, the stock of a card is pretty indicative of what's going on. Like, if there's suddenly only two copies of a card in the store, you know, it's, so we look for signs like that, as well as just like Pro Tour play and Twitter buzz and stuff like that. One of the things that we really want to avoid is making sure that I don't want to say getting taken advantage of, because like anybody who goes out and buys a cool card that they see on the Pro Tour is not trying to take advantage of a store. But like, we do want to make sure that we are keeping an eye on, like, this card is plummeting and this card is going up really high. And like, the Pro Tour means that card prices get a little bit more scrutiny than they would normally.
Awesome. So, I mean, I'm sure, I'm sure a few tweets over the weekend from me will help Aiden because I have to be glued to the screen on that one. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss, Tarkan, before we go into interest and what we're or what Morgan's going to be acquiring, especially over this weekend?
I'm curious. So, do you all obviously kind of do you all actually? I mean, regularly speculate. Like, do you go, okay? Like, do you speculate for purely for the shop, purely for finance, or are you mostly bringing inventory to support a play motivations more so than financial motivations, like with you and your group? Again, since you sort of have this, you guys are sort of in all spheres of the game, what's the primary driver when it comes to, you know, around this time and when you're thinking about prices and cards and such?
Well, one of the things that I really like about the guys that I work with is that They want to buy all of your cards all of the time. and that's something that you sometimes don't see in stores, partially because maybe they don't have enough liquid assets to be able to sink money into your binder. But we do, and I consider myself very lucky to be able to do that, because it makes, you know, buying all of the the future standard staples a lot easier for me. If I don't have to pick through your binder, I can just, you know, buy all of it.
Yeah.
And so, like, our main motivator is having cards when people want them. So if we pass over a card that, like, only sees niche modern play and then we run out of them, that's our fault. So I think a lot of the drivers for us are, you know, making cards available to people.
So, okay, so you guys don't actually go, hey, in playtesting and word around the street, because you guys have player relationships and what, you go, we think that X card, you know, could have the potential to be really hot pro tour. Let's go out and speculate on it as well. You know, that way we have it in stock if, in case it does blow up for players. But, you know, like, I'm curious if you have your fingers in sort of all aspects, if you guys go, hey, you know, this land, we think this land's a little cheap because it's going to see a ton of play at the Pro Tour is what the word is. Let's buy up 200 of them.
Well,
you know?
Okay. So not everybody, not everybody wants to sell their entire binder.
Right.
So, like, if somebody is just trying to get tournament entry or, you know, looking to trade into a dual land because they're building Black-Red Reanimator or what have you, we have cards that we want to buy a lot of. For example, Torrential Gearhulk was one for a while.
Right.
Where, you know, it's a great control finisher and it casts spells for free, so we think this price is pretty low. Lands are always a good rule of thumb. Like, I'll buy all of your lands all the time. And, like, Battle for Zendikar lands especially. And this is kind of, you can see their price going up now, but this is the kind of thing where at the beginning of a format, it's easy to buy all of your lands because, or buy all of the lands you can get your hands on because they're so cheap.
Right.
And so that's the kind of thing that we do, as well as being like, hey, there's, like, you know, a guy I know is testing this, or a guy on coverage was playing this, and we do some of that too. But it's a lot of, it's a lot of trying to buy as much stuff as possible from people.
Interesting. Okay, so it sounds like, for example, there isn't like, hey guys, X card, we think it's going to spike, go buy a bunch of this one card. It's mostly like, let's just get as much of whatever, you know, as much of whatever your focus is, whether it be modern or standard or everything. Let's just get as much as possible, buy it at you know, when the price is really getting low, we try and buy as much as we can, as opposed to, okay guys, not inside information, but the word on the street is this card. All right, we know this is going to double in price. Let's buy a million of that card and basically speculate on it. It's not as much of that, it sounds like.
It's not as much of that at the counter, I guess. So, like, I don't do the TCG player business at all. I'm not really involved in the online stuff, but there has been some of that in the past where they notice that, you know, this card is seeing a lot of play in Jund, and it's a mythic, and it's from a set two standards ago. But, you know, it has the potential for its price to really spike. And they'll not only buy from players in that case, but they'll also buy just on TCG Player, which I don't think a lot of stores give enough credit to, like, buying cards online and getting them to make sure that you have them in stock. As well as buying from players. So that's, I think, something that makes Lodestone unique is we continue to do the online stuff even if we don't have, like, an exclusively online running business.
Right. That's actually a really good point, because it just always – it's funny you bring that up. It does make it – I mean, we've talked to a lot of vendors as well. It just kind of seems like the cards just appear magically, you know. And they don't give credence enough to the fact that – well, where else are you going to buy them, and especially in a large quantity like that?
Mm-hmm.
So, you touched on something. Now, as a player, you know, you have this duality where you're a manager, you're a player. a lot of people, I guess, and we've, I mean, this is a financial podcast and we kind of embrace that side. Is the manager side the reason you kind of have embraced that? Or is, you know, as a player, you kind of have to navigate that, you know, there is a secondary market, prices, you know, are there, they do exist and they do increase and decrease. Like, did you go into it with that knowledge, or you've kind of developed that because you've worked at game stores?
It's a little of both. Okay. I think now I am very fortunate as a player to have access to a lot of the cards that I would want to play. Just like, you know, I have the ability to borrow a deck from the store or from one of the guys that I work with or from one of my friends that I've made through playing Magic. And so, like, if that were the case exclusively and I didn't work in a store, I probably would pay less attention to finance because of it. But when I was getting started as a player, like, I started really getting into Magic around New Phyrexia, Innistrad, and, like, finance was really weird then. Seachrome Coast cost $30.
yes.
So that gave me a really good look at, like, what could happen if I wasn't careful. So I kept an eye on prices, and you know, I wasn't very good at it at first. Like, I bought Sword of War and Peace at the end of New Phyrexia, right before it rotated, which wasn't a good move. Stuff like that. But I think as somebody who works in a game store and somebody who, like, started connecting to the MTG finance side of Twitter a couple years ago now, it's that working in a game store is what's driven me to get more into it. But I think that as a player, the tools for that have been really accessible aside from just buying and selling in a store.
Well said.
For sure.
All right, let's look at some cards, and I would love to hear exactly what you are going to be picking up, Morgan, because okay. I think that will be some great advice. Just looking at through, I mean, last week and in the last few days, so Esper Charm, not very surprising there. I know that there's been an Esper control list circulating around, especially when it comes to Modern, which has led to Narset Transcendent going increasing quite a bit. This is a uncommon from Shards of Alara with no reprint, so there's really a limited amount of copies out there. Whether now, if you had them sitting around, I would suggest, you know, kind of selling into this kind of increase, because this is exactly an uncommon that could show up within the next month in a Modern Masters. I mean, this could be thrown in anywhere.
Easily.
Yeah. Curtain's Call from Commander 2016, up a great deal. This was pre-selling, I think, from under $1. And it's up to 5. But again, whenever it comes to the Commander 2016 stuff, I get a little hesitant because there's just, like, a lot of weird stuff going on with the restocking. Like, I know I was just, you know, made my rounds not too long ago, and stores are restocking. Actually, do you have have you guys had problems with that product, or are you now getting restocked as well, Morgan?
We sold out pretty fast of our first run, but then we got a second one, and the blue, green, white, red one is still in stock. I think we could get more if we wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. So yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. Runed Halo, a card from Shadowmoor, again, no reprint, is up a great deal. Actually, I think I have, like, a Russian one somewhere. Maybe if someone will need it, I'll just give it away or something. Safi, Eric's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't like to, you know, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Retract up big from... Now, again, this is from Darksteel. It's, like, forever ago. I remember opening up this card. No one wanted this card. But, I mean, listen, I don't... Whether the Cheerios list with, you know, now you have the addition of SRAM from Aether Revolt, whether it's really a thing or not, I think we can all agree that it's a deck that people would like to play just because it's cool and it's fun and it's new. I don't know if it's going to continue to be successful, but we have seen a couple lists pop up here and there on MTGO Leagues. Those results, I think, you know, we mentioned this, it popped up on an IQ. So whether that continues going forward, we'll see. I don't know, a couple others here. One that I wanted to point out, Nature's Will from Champions of Kamigawa. I mean, it's a pretty good card, I guess. I'm assuming it's Commander purposes. I don't know really what else that would be, but it's up. It's gaining steadily, I should say that.
Chaz, right above that is Mind Rack Demon, and we were kind of chatting about that before the cast, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, and also I'd like to hear maybe what Morgan thinks about that one, because that one sits in a really, really precarious position, and I think that some people, my perspective is I think some people might be overestimating what that card could do financially. I think it obviously has a ton of potential to do well at the tour, but maybe you guys could kind of sort of chime in on that one, because I'd love to hear some thoughts.
How do you come at this where you're seeing all these old standard cards start to increase? And I know, I guess as a store, you want them in stock, but are you like kind of excited to go out there and get older standard stuff? I know that we have about 7 months worth of these cards left, but I mean, at what point are you stuck? Do you not want to be like left stuck holding the bag on these?
I think right now it's fine for us to buy standard cards.
Sure.
Like that, partially because there's a, like, the reason from what I've seen, and maybe you guys have talked about this before, there's like a huge surge of excitement in our store about Mind Rack Demon because people saw it as unplayable when Reflector Mage was in standard. And they're kind of seeing the Reflector Mage banning as Wizards of the Coast's cue that, hey, you guys should start playing this mythic that we tried to push. And so I think that whether or not that's true, and it very well might be, then we're fine buying them because people are excited about it. And people have always been excited about Tireless Tracker. People still want to play with these cards because they remember the good old days. And I think that makes it a fine card, even as the price is kind of going.
Right, so at one point you're kind of cutting it off and not being as aggressive of buying these cards. But for now it seems at least okay to be having these in stock and buying them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
I guess my question is, so with Mind Rack specifically, so it's around $250-ish now. I think it was under $1 at its floor. I mean, nobody was playing it. It's got the promo, and, you know, we're going to get close. Like, in the next month or two, it's going to be, like, kind of old news, shadows and whatnot. So with a promo and that, do you think from your perspective that there's a lot of upside to this car? Because I personally think that, I mean, if it's really all over the Pro Tour, maybe it gets like $6 at the Pro Tour, but I think it's just going to kind of end up trickling on back down to maybe where it's kind of at right now. I mean, I don't know if this is the kind of card that can break out and then all of a sudden be an $8, it can just hold firm as an $8 mythic until it leaves standard. So I'm just curious what you think, considering the promo and its age in standard.
I think you have a couple of good points about it, and like, I've never gone out of my way to buy Mind Rack Demon, whereas Tireless Tracker, for example, and Collective Brutality, I've already seen that. So Mind Rack Demon specifically, the answer is I'm not super excited about that as a Pro Tour specific speculation, but as like a playability specific speculation, that's great. But like Tireless Tracker and Collective Brutality are cards that people constantly want to play in Modern too, which is interesting and makes them a little bit more a card that I'm going to go after.
Right. So would you say the same for Mind Rack Demon for Drana?
I think in the short term, Drana has a lot less impact than Mind Rack Demon.
Okay.
So just because Mind Rack Demon fits into an established archetype already, whereas Drana is a little, people are a little bit more cautious about her, I think, about like just jamming her into a deck. For whatever reason that may be, but it's going to be really easy to buy Drana very cheaply once Battle for Zendikar gets close to or has rotated, and it already is really easy to get her very cheaply. So that's less in my like line of sight for that.
You don't think this has anything to do with, like, secret Pro Tour purchasing or anything like that?
No.
All right.
Interesting.
Okay. Is there any that you wanted to pick out, Tarkan, and talk about?
So it's very interesting, especially when we think about, like, obviously the Pro Tour is coming up and Pro Tour speculation and whatnot. I personally feel this Pro Tour is a little tougher because it feels like the Mythics that are going to break out probably have already gotten a lot of, you know, received a lot of visibility and therefore may not have the same room to grow, which leaves us with rares. And the problem with the rares are, you know, we have masterpieces, so that limits their ceiling. So it's a little bit tougher. However, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that as far as Mythic and a Power Mythic, I advocate picking up Verdurus Gearholtz, even at $15. At GP San Jose, I attended this past weekend. One vendor in particular was buying it for $17, which is basically TCG mid. That to me was a clear sign. They bought that through Saturday. They didn't drop their price until Sunday. So that to me was a clear indication that there's even merchant speculation or they know of some demand for Verdurus that's going to kind of carry it through the Pro Tour. I see that easily doubling to being a $30 pick. And if it's all over the place and if it does well Pro Tour, then we're looking at $30, you know, through the season. So I still like Verdurus at 15. I think it's great. If you're buying at 16, I think it's okay. But I think it's the buy-in right now. Obviously, you want to get rid of those as soon as possible at the Pro Tour, but I think that has a lot of potential. I also, as far as rares, couple I was looking at, I think Disallow may have a lot of potential. I know it's $5. I think there could be some heavy growth Pro Tour if it's played a lot in the control decks, in which case there might be down around $10. I'm also interested in Electrostatic Pummeler, which the spread on that, the buy list price comped against the retail is almost non-existent. I mean, I think it's buy listing for about $1.25 and the retail is about $1.50. And, you know, if the energy deck sort of, if that sneaks in there, I'll buy it again. Those are kind of my for casual. I'm really liking I several casts ago, I think before the new year, I had called out Herald of Leshrac, which is played. I love foil. I'm actually like being a pop up for $4 cold snap rare hard reprint that people love me. It's just really interesting aspect, so I like that one. And then obviously I have Reserve List. I'm sticking with my last cast, which is first up stamp. It's from Tempest. It's only on an upward trajectory if you look at the charts from stocks, and supply has just been slowly dwindling, and that's about a $4 buy-in as well. So that's where I'm at.
What card was that again from Tempest? Apocalypse?
Corpse Dance.
Corpse Dance, okay.
It allows you to bring a creature from your graveyard into play. I think it gives it haste, and you can buy it back. Mana, so it's just like a cheap man's reanimate, basically, or cheap person's reanimate, excuse me, Morgan. So that's what I'm looking at. Chaz?
I've been honestly searching high and low for pretty much anything that I can see as an indicator going into Pro Tour, and I gotta tell you, this is really tough. It seems to me, like, obviously we had 2 weeks of, you know, Star City Games, and it's been a lot of Black Green and Saheeli Twin, or whatever you want to call it, copycat. I do think we are going to see those decks at the Pro Tour, but I don't think that is the only thing we're going to be seeing at the Pro Tour. And I'm starting to get this feeling that we're going to see a lot of different things. And that can't, like, the BG deck is, like, kind of like the Jund. Like, I think it just can just stick around no matter what. Like, it's just a powerful deck. And you're doing just powerful things on curve. If you can, and this sounds, again, I know it's a high buy-in already, but, you know, I look at a card like Walking Ballista, and, I mean, that's just, that could easily be the best card in the set, hands down, in Aether Revolt, and which leads me to believe that we would see a Smuggler's Copter-esque, you know, spike, especially during a Pro Tour, to the $20-$25 range. I mean, it really could get that high, because it's just so ubiquitous. It stops all this, like, nonsense. I think it would even still be good even after the Saheeli Twin, because it basically invalidates a lot of, like, X1s, which there are a considerable amount in standard, And yep. even with, like, the winding constrictor, like, you can get this thing to be pretty crazy to take out, like, 3/3s and 4/4s, like, no problem. And I don't know. I just, at $10, I know it's crazy to say, but...
Yeah, Morgan, do you think it has... Because it seems like if you have to combat Saheeli Cat, then that's obviously one of the premier choices. I mean, do you think it's the kind of thing that could end up... Well, you just kind of have to jam it in almost any standard competitive deck, to, at which you know which point it, you know the price will assuredly go up from $10. What do you think, Morgan?
What are a couple things you're looking at?
So I'm not sure about Walking Ballista being a staple in every deck. Unlike Hangerback Walker, playing it on turn two does not really do as much, just because like. The price to level up Hangerback Walker, so to speak, to put an extra counter on it, was very low versus Walking Ballista. I think it's good. Like, it's still, it definitely warrants its price point, especially in this field. The cards that I'm really excited about, I think Robert said it pretty well when he said that if it's going to be good, it probably already is good. One thing I've seen a lot of people buying right now is Quarantine Field, which has... It's actually a relatively impactful card in Standard. Like, people are playing a lot of Stasis Snares. They're playing a lot of just things that they want to sit around on the board. And I think Quarantine Field, it's being a mythic from Battle for Zendikar, has the potential to go up past the point where you'd probably want to pay for it right now. Another one that I've seen, and this is just me selling cards to people, but like people are very excited about Collective Effort, which yep. is kind of an out of left field one, but it destroys Quarantine Field. So if
destroy Quarantine Field.
If white aggro becomes like if white is the aggro deck of choice, then I think Collective Effort will see more play. I was going to say, one of the things that I am planning on acquiring more of this weekend and over the course of Kaladesh Standard in particular is Kaladesh Uncommons and Fatal Pushes.
Kaladesh Uncommons?
Yes.
Oh, they're so good.
Well,
Not Aether Revolt, Kaladesh.
Yeah, mostly Kaladesh.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, I was thinking Aether Revolt as well. Sorry. When you said Fatal
Pushes.
Brain immediately went to Aether Revolt. So the Kaladesh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of the cards that I see us running out of are uncommons from Kaladesh. Some of the ones that people might expect are like Harnessed Lightning and Glimmer of Genius, but you know, people, and this isn't even an uncommon is Revolutionary Rebuff is one that we run out of pretty frequently. And then like Fatal Push is something that we just constantly run out of, so I like having those around. I don't think the price is going to change, though, so that's probably not a good, like, speculation.
Yeah.
But for me personally, as someone who wants people to buy cards, it's a good thing to have.
And I'm sure Aether Hub, right? I'm sure that's one that's hard to keep in stock.
Oh, yeah, gosh. Oh, yeah.
They go out in the truckload.
I heard a conversation yesterday, and I think this, like, speaks kind of to the power of Aether Hub. But he was playing against a Jeskai Saheeli deck, and the guy's like, you know, when you tapped out there, I could have just killed you with Jeskai, with Copycat. And his opponent goes, wait, you could have? Like, you didn't have either color of mana. And he's like, yeah, I could have played the Felidar Guardian, blinked my Aether Hub after tapping it for red, and then tapped my Aether Hub for blue.
Wow. Yeah, it's... It's some crazy... actually, it was funny because Ryan, over the last SCG weekend, they were talking about, like, these weird splashes that you can actually do, especially with Radiant Flames, with Aether Hub, and that's some really sweet technology. And I'm using his words. I was looking at a lot of the Japanese results over there, and it feels like they're trying to do these weird things with Improvise. And, you know, with Scrap Trawler and Ballista, they kind of figured out that little engine there. So that's just a deck that could, like, sprout up at the Pro Tour that nobody knew, but you could have known if you were, you know, kind of looking outside the box at other, international results. So I don't know. I think they're cheap enough that you can, you know, buy into. I mean, Scrap Trawler's dropped even below the price point that I would even expected it to. But I still think that's a pretty inherently powerful card. Whether it's like an $8 card, I don't think that is the case. But it could kind of surge back up into the 4 or 5 range if it really has a good showing at Pro Tour. But and I think Metallic Mimic actually enables some really powerful stuff.
The buy list on Metallic Mimic is around $2 too. I like that, Chaz. I think that's an interesting call.
Yeah, I think I was originally not as hyped about that card, but then I'm looking. It actually does enable some pretty cool stuff, and especially maybe the animation module thing comes back and it's decent.
Yeah, more to say, Collective Effort too. I just to comment that real quick. I think that's really. I actually haven't thought about that card, and I was looking it over a couple more times, and that just seems like the kind of thing that, you know, Craig Wesco would just. with, and you'll be like, oh my gosh, like it kind of deals with a lot of stuff that you could potentially run into in the format. I think that's really interesting.
You can also cast it off of SRAM's.
I was literally just about to. That is really crazy that you could do that.
Yeah, that's pretty epic, actually.
That's pretty crazy, actually. And you can like fully what's the ability on what's that ability?
Kicker.
Yeah, the kicker. I will just use kicker.
yeah, right.
But yeah, you can make the 3-1-1. That's actually pretty cool. All right. I think that about wraps things up here. Morgan, thank you very much for joining us. I think this has been very beneficial. Yeah, like I said, I think you brought a really good perspective to this, and I think the listeners will really enjoy it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Thanks for coming, Morgan. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, we should do this again. All right, everyone, that is going to wrap things up for the QS Cast this week. We will see you after the Pro Tour, and I will be very grumpy. Because, yet again, East Coast. I mean, it's not as bad, but, man, it's tough.
Oh, yes, I just thought of something.
Yes.
Did we ever say my Twitter handle? Because I feel like that's...
Oh, my goodness. You're right. And I keep forgetting this every cast. Where can they find you on the internet, Morgan?
You can find me mainly on my Twitter feed at MTG Valkyrie. If you guys are wondering why they're like, who this, you probably know this person. It's like, that's why, because I'm at MTG Valkyrie.
Yes. Sorry about that. Yeah. I always forget this every cast. Tarkin usually reminds me. So I feel a little embarrassed that our guest has to remind me. Tarkin, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm at the_Tark, T-A-R-K, on Twitter. I'm an admin over at the MTG Finance Central Facebook page. You can chat with me anytime there, and I work with QS.
Awesome. Yep, Twitter's the best place to find me, at ChazVMTG. I write a lot for Quiet Speculation. I'm on the MTG Goldfish podcast. So, yeah, find me there. Again, this is the QS Cast. We're going to wrap it up this week. Again, thank you, Morgan. It's been awesome.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Go hook it for the Pro Tour. You're probably going to be working double time.
Oh, yeah.
Take care, everyone. This is going to wrap it up. We'll see you next time.
See ya.